Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. To start the show, we have a couple of guests for you from the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. And we'll talk with them about some recent changes in that organization, take a look at what they're working on right now. Our guest, Tim Donahue, director of the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, interim director of the Wisconsin Energy Institute. Tim, great to have you back.
Thanks for having us, Larry. It's great to be here.
Yeah, and also great to have Tina Nelson, or Nielsen, excuse me, the associate director of the GLBRC. Tina, welcome.
Thanks, Larry. Nice to have you with us.
We'll talk about what's new in biofuel and what it may mean for you and for me. So, hope you have some questions about alternative energy, alternative fuel sources. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. Love to hear from you. Before we talk, Tim, about changes to the GLBRC's research mission, let's talk about bioenergy for a minute. You know, I think most people are familiar with what it is, but maybe not everybody. So what is bioenergy?
So bioenergy is actually around the big bucket. It's really what they are. It could span anything from starch ethanol, which we depend on a lot in the United States and around the world, and is something that Great Lakes Bioenergy has never worked on. I'll just get that out there right away. To lignocellulosic biofuels that we have worked on for 10 years, all the way through algal oils or the generation of natural gas and anaerobic digesters. So there's a lot of buckets that you can you can put bioenergy in. Great Lakes Bioenergy lives in one of those spaces, and that's the production of fuels and chemicals now from lignocellulose, the non-edible, non-starch part of plant material.
Yeah, and now you've got some changes. Usually it's good for the better, hopefully.
Change is exciting. So the center has been funded for the last 4 months on another 5-year contract with the U.S. Department of Energy. Our last cycle started December 1st of 2017. And change is good. Change means we've accomplished some of the missions that you and I started talking about 10 years ago when we were both younger. We've allowed technology to move out to the private sector. We can talk more about that if you want. And there are new opportunities that, as a basic science unit from the Department of Energy, we are now funded to work on. In the lignocellulosic fuels and chemicals field. So we're really excited about that. We're rolling those things out. I like to use the term we're shifting gears, and that's okay. A very automotive relevant way of thinking about it.
And the changes, Tina, are, you know, basically making some success and reaching a particular plateau when it comes to certain types of research you've been working on, I assume.
We're really excited about the challenges that we've been put against in this new phase. So it's not just providing a fuel coming out of the feedstock or the plant material. And it's more of really getting to a drop-in hydrocarbon equivalent fuel so that you don't have to worry about grabbing the right handle at the gas station. The other thing that we're extremely excited about and really broadens what our research center can do is getting into bioproducts, finding equivalents that used to come out of an oil barrel that we can fully replace the barrel with these chemicals and progress the entire bioenergy stage forward, but adding in the bioproducts portion. So we're really excited about this grand challenge we're facing now.
What are some of the, could you give me an example of the kind of, where you might be going with that kind of research?
So I think So Tina really hit the nail on the head. I'll say it in a slightly different way. We want to make products out of as much of a ton of biomass that shows up at a refinery gate as possible. The petroleum industry makes a profit by making products from as much of the barrel that shows up at their refinery gate as possible. So we see fuels as a large fraction of the product that a new refinery will make, and they can make some money on that, or a lot of money on that. If we can help them make chemicals as well as fuels, the profits they can make on chemicals, things like aromatics, benzene, toluene, xylene, precursors for nylon, or plastic soda bottles, then that allows them to diversify the revenues that they're going to make. And the chemicals for the petroleum refinery industry are actually more valuable per unit than the fuels. So anything we can do to help them make chemicals allows them to reduce the price or manage the price of the fuels in a way that's very different than a starch ethanol plant, which makes one product, and that's ethanol.
Yeah. What does all this mean for ethanol?
I think ethanol will continue to be a fuel additive in the automotive sector for a significant period of time in the United States. I think ethanol was never meant to be a jet engine fuel supplement or a diesel or a naval shipping fuel additive. It's in there as something to help the fuel burn better. Chemically, it's called an oxygenate. I think it'll be a while before you and I are driving a car, unless it's an electric-only car, that doesn't have ethanol in it. So I don't think this puts the ethanol industry out of business. I think it provides a new hydrocarbon-based platform, as Tina said, for the engine manufacturers, whether it's aviation, shipping, or automotive.
Yeah, interesting. So in terms of the organization itself, then, how is that organization going to be accomplished, or how is it going to look?
So we have pivoted since the last 10 years, where we used to be in a more siloed structure where we would have research based on feedstocks, deconstruction, conversion of that material into an end product, and then overall sustainability of the processes. And we have changed our structure to really simulate what happens in industry, where you're attacking problems, not a focus area. So instead of having, say, a chemistry division within industry, you have a portion that is attacking a problem, say, to improve the deconstruction of all plant material to prime it for conversion. So we have 10 different projects based on these three overall focus areas. Those focus areas are to optimize the plant material, whether it's through genetic modification or through getting more productivity off of the land. The second focus area is the optimal or idealized deconstruction of those materials to be converted into final products. And then we have an encompassing knowledge gap, which is an integrated knowledge gap, taking things all the way from the field to the end product and optimizing it either through modeling or creating these pipelines of the plant material all the way to the end. And then we have a very exciting project that takes the bioproducts lens and getting us to products such as terpenes, that we're taking it through a plant approach as well as a traditional conversion approach. So we're not siloed like we used to be as far as, if you're working on feedstocks, that's what you're working on. It's more of a grand problem of how do marginal lands affect the productivity of the overall crop? And then with those, can you deconstruct them like you used to of the products that were on fertile land? So it's greater emphasis on solving problems.
So you're going to have, you may have a chemist, an economist, an engineer. I'm a communications. You might have a communications person. You might have a whole host of people.
So I think you really extracted the bottom line there, Larry. If you look at these 10 projects, none of them are only worked on by people in plant biology or chemical engineering. They're all integrated. They all have people that work across the domains that will be required to look at producing biomass that's valuable for a farmer all the way through to aggregating it, transporting it, making fuels and products, and then delivering it to consumers. It's a very different approach.
Yeah. Well, let's get our listeners involved. If you have a question or comment, I hope you'll join in. Here's the number to call. It's 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. Love to hear from you. How do you feel about replacing petroleum-based fuels with biofuel? What would you like to know about these biofuel products and how it's produced? 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. I'm Larry Mueller. My guests today on the show, Tim Donahue and Tina Nielsen. Tim directs the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, and the associate director is Tina Nielsen. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 11:45 today, we'll be hearing from the weather guys, except it'll be the weather guy today, talking about climate and weather, and we'll take a look at those nor'easters that have been going on and what's going on there, and maybe talk tornadoes and a whole bunch more with our guest, Steve Ackerman. But right now, visiting with Tim Donahue, Tina Nielsen, of the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. Tim directs that and is interim director of the Wisconsin Energy Institute. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Let's take a call. George in Elk Mound will give you a chance now. George, hi. Thank you for calling.
How are you today?
Great. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
First of all, I'd like to say I'm a huge supporter of biodiesel. However, I'm against ethanol for the billions of dollars it's wasting in fuel and taxpayers' money trying to come up with a non-efficient fuel. But my question for your show, people, is the use of hemp in biofuels. And is that something you're also looking into?
Mm-hmm. So thanks a lot for your comments, George. Hemp is an example of the kind of crop that we could process. I will say in the first 10 years, we spent a lot of time focused on crop residues, things we would make from corn stover that's left over from agriculture. And one of the things we're pivoting to in the next phase of the center is to look at crops that are not grown on agricultural land but are grown on so-called marginal land. And those could be anything from hemp to switchgrass to poplar or native prairies, things that have very low energy footprints, very low fertilizer needs. We are not necessarily focusing on hemp as something that we would try to engineer, but it does fall in the kinds of crops that we would grow on non-agricultural land for people in the North Central region. You probably know better than I, and Larry does, that we have had and we do have the ability to produce significant amounts of crops like hemp in the Wisconsin and North Central region. So it will be something that we hopefully will be able to make biofuels from moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Tina, you want to add to that?
Yeah, Tim spoke about the North Central Midwest region, but We also do have research that will expand the footprint of bioenergy crops. So we do extensive work on energy sorghum as well with one of our partners of Great Lakes Bioenergy down at Texas A&M University. And the reason why energy sorghum is very exciting is because it's drought tolerant. And so that really expands the footprint of where we can go with these bioenergy feedstocks.
Yeah, that would make a big difference. George, thanks for what about his comment about why all that money? Why do we spend all that money on ethanol when it turns out it's a loser in terms of what inputs versus output?
Well, depending on how you do the analysis, it's not necessarily a loser. And I don't want to get into that conversation that deeply because it might distract us from what we're doing. But let's remember why ethanol is in there. Ethanol is in the automotive fuel to help burn the hydrocarbons more completely. It's a combustion additive. Without ethanol in there, the fuel would not burn as well, and we'd have a lot more air pollution. Prior to using ethanol, we also used other oxygenates that helped combust your fuel, but led to more greenhouse gases than what we're currently getting by using ethanol. So it's a bit of a science combustion nuanced conversation to why we need oxygenates in any engine to help burn as much of the fuel as possible, because if not, you have other greenhouse gas and health impacts.
Yeah, that makes good sense. George, thanks very much for calling. What about you? Give a call, 800-642-1234. Brian emailed, and I don't know if you're, maybe you can answer this, I hope you can, wondering about pennycress for biofuel production.
So pennycress is a crop that is not being evaluated in Great Lakes Bioenergy. There are others we know about who are evaluating it with USDA and Department of Energy funding.
So somebody else is doing it.
Somebody else is doing it, and in particular, it's being evaluated as a crop that could be productive but could also be used to make oil in its seeds. So it's not something that we are not funded to work on seed oils. We're focused to work on lignocellulosic production. It's part of the portfolio nationwide. It's just not part of our portfolio, given the way DOE asked us to assemble the centers.
And these centers are, just to go back on this, there are centers around the country like we have our Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, which I think is, you cooperate with Michigan State,
yep,
and not sure about other.
So there are, let me go back and make a couple of points, because you're touching on some important issues there, Larry. We have been funded for 10 years. You know that. We started sitting down 10 years ago, initially by the Bush 43 administration in 2007, through the Obama administration. We've now been renewed for another 5 years of funding by the Trump administration. Initially, there were three centers that received approximately $75 million a year. There are now four centers, and with the budget that was just signed last week, those four centers are now funded to the tune of $90 million a year. So it's about a 20% increase in basic science research for these activities in this administration. So we're really excited to have continued bipartisan support from Congress and the administration on this program. The three centers, three of the four centers are continuations. They competed of the existing ones, Great Lakes Bioenergy, which, as you said, is a partnership mostly with Michigan State University, and continuing work with Texas A&M University, where our sorghum work is focused, and the University of British Columbia in Canada, as well as a new partner up in Houghton. Did I pronounce that right,
you
Michigan?
Did. Yes.
I'm not from Michigan. Tina is, with Michigan Technological University. The other two continuing centers are out of Oak Ridge National Lab and the Lawrence Berkeley Lab area in San Francisco, plus a fourth one that's centered at the University of Illinois. So again, there's increased investment in this type of activity in the Midwest with the fourth center being added.
Well, let's take a look. Let's take another call. Actually, you can join in, 800-642-1234. Give a call. Chris in Port Wing, back to you now. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I had a comment, and then I thought of something else. But when you talked about growing the hemp on marginal lands, my grandfather in Lithuania grew sugar beets, and he used hemp for the rotation crop because the beets took so much out of the soil. And the hemp would have very long tap roots. His plants, he said, were 12 feet tall.
Yep.
So those tap roots would go down and bring minerals back up.
Yep.
And so to marginalize it just on unusable land or marginal land. And it's also used for erosion control. But I'm also wondering, have you done research on making paints and varnishes out of the oil?
So let me deal with those in two separate pieces. Those are both excellent questions, Chris. What you're talking about with putting hemp, for example, as a crop in between rows of corn or sugar beets is something we have evaluated in the first 10 years. And we have the data that we have brought out to producers in the Midwest to think about new agricultural practices. You raise several important points. You get biomass out of that we could convert into fuels and chemicals now. You get a root system that does everything you talked about in terms of nutrient recycling, but it also sequesters CO2 deep under the ground, which has an enormous greenhouse gas footprint instead of releasing it back into the atmosphere. For those types of practices to take hold would require farmers and agribusiness to really, and society to incentivize that type of behavior. That's not a basic science question anymore. That's a policy and politics question. Have we looked at producing varnishes and paints? To the extent that the paint on your walls is held there with a lignin binder, those are exactly the kinds of things that we're looking at in the next 5 or 10 years in Great Lakes Bioenergy. When I say we want to make products out of as much of the biomass as possible, lignin is about 30% of the carbon in lignocellulosic biomass, and we want to make compounds that companies like Beauregard Lignitech in Wisconsin and or elsewhere around the world are making as additives to paint binders, to battery surface adhesives, to fiberglass binders, things like that, that we currently get from fossil fuels. We'd like to see society be able to make a decision about making those types of chemicals in a cost-effective way from renewable feedstocks in addition to petroleum, or instead of petroleum, if you would prefer that answer.
Yeah.
But we're not there yet.
Well, good.
All right.
Great. Thank you for the information.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And again, you can join in with your own question at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. You mentioned a bit ago that you were, and here I suddenly blanked on, you were going to talk about some moving of the research that you've done to private business.
Sure.
And it could be worth talking about that a little bit. Tina, do you want to address that a bit?
Sure. So we've been very proud of our intellectual property production through the first 10 years, meaning what our inventions have been and what society or industry has picked up. So we've had over 150 inventions come out of the first 10 years of Great Lakes Bioenergy. Of those, we've had 58 patents awarded and 89 license and options from different companies, including 5 startups. So that's an incredible track record for only 10 years of a basic science center. We continue to see that ball rolling. We have, with these five startups, they're pretty diverse. And we've even had one startup already acquired by a major company. Jim Steele's Lactic Solution, a UW faculty here, his company Lactic Solutions was acquired by Lallemand, which is, I think, the number two yeast company in the entire world. And so this is a technology that's of interest and really applicable to the industry that exists there and the ones that want to go forward into the future with us.
So that's some great news. We're getting a lot of people employed, a lot of new businesses. There's a lot of tax dollars that are going to be coming forth to the benefit of the estate and so forth.
So yeah, and so to touch on that, if we had a screen for you to show your radio listeners, I don't think you figured that out yet. Someone needs to invent television or something.
Well, we put it up on our Facebook page.
We have a map that I show when I give talks about the potential for these next generation biorefineries in the North Central region, and we have a map that would put almost 40 of those in the upper Midwest that are fed by crops grown on non-agricultural land.
Yeah.
Each of those refineries would probably cost on the order of $500 million to build. So that's economic opportunity for those communities. They, just like the dairy industry, employs people to bring milk to places where it's then, you know, pasteurized and bottled and shipped. All of that biomass that's going to feed those refineries needs to be aggregated. And we estimate you could put one with no more than a 50-mile radius so that you wouldn't be paying a lot of money for shipping. So there's a lot of jobs in harvesting that biomass, aggregating it, shipping it to a refinery, and then having that refinery run 24/7, hires people, and produce locally grown products that can then be used by consumers in a cost-effective way, really gets to the point where you can think about the upper Midwest and other parts of the country being fuels and chemicals producers in a way that you typically think about the Gulf of Mexico or maybe, you know, the upper Midwest and in the Lake Superior area, because there are pipelines that come in there from Alaska and Canada. So we see this as economic opportunities for a lot of people.
Let's go to Kevin in Marshfield next. Hi, Kevin. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, good morning. I was calling in regards to the biomass and the are you talking about manufacturing? I just started listening here. So I haven't gotten the whole conversation, but in manufacturing, like dimethyl ether for being used in, I mean, it's a manufactured gas that's being used in burning and diesel-powered equipment. Volvo Heavy has been experimenting with it, I know, out in California, and it's Oberon Fuels.
Yeah, I was going to say Oberon.
Well, so Tina can probably do a better job on this one. Tina, before she came to work for us, used to work in the dark side of the energy industry. She worked for BP, so maybe she can talk about this a little.
Just get that with the dimethyl ether. It's a manufactured gas that's used as the propellant in a lot of aerosol, and it's clean burning as opposed to
something
where it wouldn't take as much to switch the diesels over, and you wouldn't need all the added pollution control systems in the diesels.
Yep. So, Kevin, we aren't looking at that as a specific product we're going after. I think Oberon has a good start on getting DME out into the market, but we are looking at what we can be optimizing our fuels with. And so we have an incredible resource here on this campus, the Engine Research Center, that we have partnered with in the past, and we hope to continue partnering with them by testing out what the additives that we would put into the gas tank would have as an effect on it, whether it's with a pollutant coming out or with the optimization of the thermodynamics or what have you. But DME isn't one we're looking at, but I think Oberon's got a good handle on it.
And again, if somebody else is working on it...
it's not basic science anymore, yeah, I'd say.
Yeah.
And making that out of biomass might be a particular challenge. We like to look at the kinds of compounds you're going to get out of biomass and see what we can make easily and, most importantly, cheaply. And typically, those are compounds that are just a couple of steps away from the building blocks that you get out of biomass. We have a startup company that's making furans, that most of the furans in the United States are currently imported from the Asian Rim. So, and they're a Wisconsin company. They're cited in the research park in Madison. So we're looking for things that we can make cheap, easily, and within one or two chemical or biological steps from the kinds of things you can get out of biomass sugars or from lignin.
Yeah, interesting. Kevin, thank you so much for calling. I want to give Ivy a chance to join in from Evansville. Hi, Ivy. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm all for using biofuels, but my brother-in-law, who's a botanist, was concerned that the use of marginal lands now have been set aside for CRP and wildlife and native plants, and I'm concerned that you're talking about non-agricultural lands. Does that mean these lands will now be opened up for producing just biofuels? So
yeah.
Talk about that a little.
I think you and your brother-in-law are spot on. We have a tagline that says we want to do biofuels right. Doing it wrong would mean you destroy the land and you destroy people's ability to use it for enjoyment, and you destroy the ability of that land to serve as a native nesting ground for wildlife and other types of activities. We have people in UW and at Michigan State who have spent a lot of time looking at the ability for CRP land to just be harvested instead of being burned like we do every year, and being able to use that for the sustainable production of biofuels over decades, and avoiding situations like we had at the turn of the century in the United States, in Texas and Oklahoma, where the non-sustainable use of land led to great environmental problems. We think there is a way to do biofuels right and allow biomass producers, called farmers, to get increased revenue for their land, but still enjoy their land. We know many farmers, and I'm not a farmer, enjoy CRP land and native prairie land for hiking, for fishing, for hunting, and just the natural beauty of it. And that beauty comes with that land sequestering carbon. That's a big positive greenhouse aspect of that land. We want to continue those practices and make those lands available to people, but also, to the extent that we can, make products on those.
Yeah. So you work with, you may work with wildlife biologists.
Absolutely.
As an example.
Absolutely. We have people in the center. I say it all the time. Larry has heard me going from A to Z, from agronomist through zoologist, who think about these issues of nesting and the environmental impact of these practices.
Let's take another call. And thanks very much for that call. I really appreciate it. Jeff in Ironwood, Michigan, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Jeff. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. My question is, for a biofuel, but what is the exchange for cost when you talk about how much does it take in material and other machinery just to produce 1 gallon of biofuel?
Yeah.
You know, is there actually a formula that says that they're further ahead, or are we wasting more fuel just to plant and replant?
Yeah.
So that's an excellent question, Jeff, and this is all part of the modeling activities that are going on in the center that Tina talked about. There's a lot of cool things that I, as a microbiologist, could think about making from biological sources, but if they're not cost-effective compared to a gallon of gas that we get from petroleum, and society doesn't want to incentivize our use to make those, I probably shouldn't go spend a lot of time working on those things. So we evaluate all of those practices moving forward in the center as we think about new hydrocarbon replacements or new chemicals that we would get from a ton of biomass that we currently get from a barrel of petroleum. On the other hand, we're also looking at practices to make these refineries more profitable. So, for example, a current refinery produces waste, residue, from plant material that it can't turn into fuels. That residue is now run through an anaerobic digester and turned into electricity or power to run the refinery, and they actually sell some back to the grid. Well, we have activities in the center that can take a fraction of that residue and convert it into chemicals, replacing the amount that the refinery sells back to the grid, but making 10 to 20 fold more profits for that refinery than they would out of running it all through an anaerobic digester. That allows that refinery to actually reduce the cost of the fuel. And that's the kind of refinery we want to be able to place in the United States, where it doesn't necessarily increase the price of the fuel, because that refinery can produce fuels and chemicals just like a petroleum refinery did.
Yeah. Tina, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, Jeff, just to connect to you, being up in the UP, there is a cellulosic biorefinery up there. American Bioprocessing has one up in the UP. And what's wonderful about that biorefinery is that it uses forestry residue. So, again, thinking about the techno-economic analysis, it's already taking something that's a considered kind of junk and doing something with it. So we've had some really creative industries coming at us in the recent past to look at what their waste stream is and how we can leverage that waste stream into a valuable product. So I think American Bioprocessing up by you, Jeff, is a really good example of a first generation step to that. We just want to take it to the second generation, where we're making hydrocarbon equivalents or bioproducts out of it.
Yeah. As I think about the research, too, you know, there was, you know, a lot of people have complained about, oh, corn, you spent all that time on corn. But when you've got basic research there and you start, it's going to be, I mean, you took a product, ethanol from corn, for example, that there was, it was very expensive.
In the beginning.
In the beginning.
Right.
But over time, it's gotten much better. And in that process, you think, learned a whole lot more about other...
Right. Just think of what it would cost if only 0.1% of the people were using smartphones. I'm not going to mention a manufacturer, right? But now with everybody using a smartphone, the cost per unit goes down. The more refineries that can be convinced as there's a business model here, the more of them that will grow up, and they will compete with each other to sell those products in a cost-effective way. That's the benefit of doing things at scale.
Well, on that note, we are out of time. Some real promising research down the road there, the way it sounds.
Yeah, we're really excited. Larry, you know me. You've heard me say this before. We're bullish about the future. We understand, as Tina said, that this is a long road. We've gotten a lot of stuff done in 10 years, a lot more than I thought. And we're really proud of that, not only the patents and the companies, but over 1,100 papers. Some of our work when it comes to agricultural practices is not going to lead to patents, but it's going to change the business model for what farmers around the country or biomass producers are going to be able to do. And so we're really excited about what we can do in the next phase of funding and very proud that there's continued support for this in Congress and in the administration.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you both very much. And a couple months from now, we'll probably be taking another look at what's going on over there. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Talking today with Tim Donahue, director of the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center and interim director of the Wisconsin Energy Institute, Tina Nielsen, associate director of the GLBRC. And well, every couple of months we like to have folks from there come and talk with us about what's going on, and we'll keep that up. And, you know, every so often, like the last Monday of the month, we like to talk about climate and weather as well, and normally with John Martin and Steve Ackerman, but John's off in England, so we're going to talk with Steve Ackerman next, take a look at what's going on in the weather here on the Ideas Network.